The pound here in Britain, in your pocket.
Right guard for Harry!
TTFN!
Quote, unquote. We present another edition of the game based on well-known sayings and some which haven't been said yet. It's devised and introduced by Nigel Rees.
Hello again. 'Twas Ralph Waldo Emerson who said,
by necessity, by proclivity, and by delight, we all quote.
And there you heard Ronald Fletcher doing so. This week you'll also be hearing from a distinguished panel, including Graham Garden, Roberta Lee, Ned Sherrin, and John Wells. We start this week, as often, with a mixed bag of quotations, anything and everything for you to try and identify. So let's have the first one, which is for you, Graham Garden. Can you complete this quotation?
All our best men are dead. Carlyle, Tennyson, Browning, George Eliot.
And I don't feel too well myself.
Yes, that is the gist of it. From Punch in 1893, all those people's names are dead. I'm not feeling very well myself. Well done. Ned Sherrin, a recorded quotation for you. Who said this?
Vive le Québec! Vive le Québec libre!
It was old Gordon. Nay, I think his other name is the girl.
Yes. Right? And now, where was he saying this remarkable...
Quebec, perhaps?
No, well, it was Montreal. In July 1967, these were extempore remarks, which he...
No.
Which
no.
he
People
thought out well in
advance. Extempore remarks like that, yes.
And which insulted the federal government of Canada and led to the general's rapid departure from the country. Roberta Lee... A more recent quote for you.
I've fallen in love with all sorts of girls, and I fully intend to go on doing so.
Prince Charles.
Yes, absolutely right. 2 marks. Prince Charles, that was speaking in an interview in 1975. John Wells.
We are all socialists nowadays.
Who said that?
Prince Charles.
Well, not a million miles from the answer.
Princess Anne. Her mother. Perhaps it was her
mother. Keep on going back and you'll eventually hit it.
George the Fourth.
No, it was in fact Prince Charles's great-great-grandfather, Edward the Seventh, who said it at the Mansion House in 1895, if you've been there. And
converted by Daisy Countess of Warwick.
And it was said earlier by Sir William Harcourt in that form. Of course, back to Graham Garden.
All was crazy and could be grounded. All he had to do was ask. And as soon as he did, he would no longer be crazy and would have to fly more missions. Or would be crazier to fly more missions and sane if he didn't. But if he was sane, he had to fly them. If he flew them, he was crazy and didn't have to. But if he didn't want to, he was sane and had to.
That is the nub, crux, pith moment, and indeed the embodiment of Catch-22 by Joseph Heller.
Absolutely right. That's some catch, that Catch-22. It's the best there is, Dr. D'Amica agreed. Well done. Ned Sherrin.
And how, demanded Mr. Brandyball, sparing a kidney, was the new Ibsen? Bricks without shore, said Mr. Gloom, dissecting a kipper.
I shall be in terrible trouble if I don't get it right.
That's right.
Yes, in that case, it must be Carol Brown's in Don't Mr. Disraeli, I think.
Yes, which she wrote with her previous collaborator.
S.J. Simon.
All right, moving along to Roberta Lee, who I don't think you collaborate with anybody else. A scratchy bit of film soundtrack for you.
You know you don't have to act with those things. You don't have to say anything and you don't have to do anything. Not a thing. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle. You just put your lips together and blow.
Lauren Bacall.
Yes.
To Humphrey Bogart, whom she subsequently married.
Can you get the film?
Was it To Have and Have Not or something?
Yes, To Have and To Have Not, absolutely right.
But she had, didn't she?
And finally in this round, John Wells, would you please complete the following?
Meredith is a prose Browning.
And Browning is a small automatic revolver.
Imaginative. Not the actual answer. I'll give you another go.
All right.
Meredith is a prose Browning.
And Mrs. Meredith is an amateur's knockover.
Well, I think that's very good. I think 2 marks for advancing. No, he gets his 2 marks for getting the wrong answer.
Well, if it's not, well.
In fact, it was dear old Oscar Wilde, who we're always quoting, Meredith is a prose Browning, and so is Browning. He used poetry as a medium for writing prose. And after all that, we turn our attention to scramble quotations, quotes which have been tinkered with, and I want you to identify the original quotation underneath, as it were, for 2 marks. Graham Garden.
The American government is a rule of the people, by the people, for the boss.
Well, it's a scrambled version of the Constitution, the American Constitution, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
You're almost there. It's not, in fact, the American Constitution. It's describing something which is very American.
Apple pie.
Apple pie is of the people, by the people, for the people, yes. The original quote is from a man called Theodore Parker, who said, a democracy, that is, a government of all the people, by all the people, for all the people, which also echoes the general prologue to the Wycliffe translation of the Bible, which I'm sure you all know. This Bible is for the government of the people, by the people, for the people. All right, moving along then. Ned Sherrin.
Every cloud has a silver lining.
What is that based on?
Every cloud.
Yes, no, absolutely right. Now, can you tell me who scrambled it for another mark?
Who's clever with words? David Frost, Bernard Levin, not Magnus so much, Magnusson.
Not so much clever with words as interested in silver lining.
David Frost.
Oh, David Frost, David.
Enoch Powell has difficulty pronouncing his L.
Yes, perhaps it could be. Could well be Enoch, couldn't it?
Only clown.
In fact, it was that great showman, P.T. Barnum. Every crowd has a silver lining. Moving on to Roberta Lee.
Greater luck hath no man than this, that he lay down his wife at the right moment.
That sounds like one of my books. Life, of course. That he lay down his life.
Yes. Where does it come from?
Well, some very happy husband, I guess. I don't know.
In fact, it's from the good book, The Gospel According to St. John, 15:3. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And down the care of garden.
Repetition.
There was another occasion more recently, which I think we've already mentioned on the programme, when this quotation was scrambled. Did anybody know that? Well, Jeremy Thorpe said...
Oh, yes. Greater love hath no man who lay down his friends for his life.
Yes.
About Macmillan's booting out of the Selwyn Loideries.
That's right, in 1962, the night of the long knives.
Yeah.
John Wells.
There is a tide in the affairs of women which, taken at the flood, leads God knows where.
That's a very, very dirty one. That is the bard, Bent, or the Bent Bard, William Shakespeare. A quotation from one of his well-known music operas.
Could you actually give me the quotation?
There is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to something or other.
To fortune, yes.
Fortune.
You get your mark.
It sounds almost as good as Jonathan Miller, is that?
Laurence Olivier, I would have said.
Well, I'm hoping to get some acting work after this collapses.
Can you tell me which, in fact, which of Shakespeare's musicals it comes from?
Hello, Dolly?
No. In fact, it's from Julius Caesar, said by Brutus. Before we go on to the next round, let me thank again those of you who have written in with your ideas for invented quotations. Mr. W.L. Howe of Chesterfield suggests that what Moses said to David Kossoff was, in fact...
Continue taking the tablets as before.
And Lady Manda...
Mine was better.
And Lady Manda, writing from SW1, tells me that, in fact, the reply to Dr. Faustus's question, is this the face that launched 1,000 ships, was...
No, she's gone for a Burton.
Well done. It's the panel's turn, and we await with interest the fruit of their researches into what was said when some more great confrontations took place. So, first panel, what was said when the darling of the music halls, Marie Lloyd, met the darling of somewhere else, Selwyn Lloyd?
I think she would probably have vamped up one of her old songs and said something like, instead of saying, "Oh, Mr. Porter, what shall I do?" she might have said, "Oh, Mr. Speaker, what shall I say? I want to be a liberal, but I don't want to give it away."
any other offers?
I may have been a bit out on the tune.
Ned Sheeran's singing is something to hear. any other offers?
Good old days rules.
Yes.
Okay. Roberta.
I think Selwyn would have said in his very decorous way, "I'm only prepared to discuss current affairs with you." And she said, "That's all right, Dux. Currently, I've got three going."
another confrontation between two people with the same name, indeed related, Sigmund Freud and his grandson, Clement Freud.
I thought, picture, if you will, the scene in the Viennese consulting room. And the aging analyst is having a word with young Clay. And says, "Hey, what's this kinky thing you've got about dogs here, Clement, baby?" Clement replies, "Henry and I are just very good friends." "Henry? What is this? Henry is a male dog or something?" "Well, in fact, we're so fond of each other that I'm beginning to believe that I actually am a dog myself." "So there's nothing wrong with that? Nothing at all to be ashamed of? Nothing wrong with being a dog? Get off the couch, town boy, in your basket."
Ronnie, you're bursting to say something.
No, I say it with some diffidence, actually. But Sigmund Freud, passing away, said, "My boy, I leave the world, the id, the ego, and the super-ego. What will you leave?" And Clement Freud said, "The fried ego."
All right. We'll continue to that.
Yeah, I apologize.
What was likely to have been said when Anne Boleyn met Vera Lynn?
As you know, probably, that Anne Boleyn was executed on the stroke of midday. And when she met Vera Lynn, she said, "It's one thing to be top of the pops, but it's another to be topped on the pips."
Any more?
Yes, Vera would say to Anne, "There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover." And Anne said, "I'm afraid they'll be on their own, honey. I've no head for heights."
But Ronnie, Ronnie, you're dying to say something.
I thought, actually,
Anne Boleyn said, "They've chopped the head from my body." And Vera Lynn said, "Never mind, dear. They'll meet again."
Yes, a variation on Roberta's theme, really, that Anne Boleyn said, "I only started the trend of husbands marrying lots of wives and then bumping them off." And Vera Lynn replied, "Yes, there'll be bluebeards over the white."
Well done, Battle. Thank you for your suggestions. And now we go back to real quotations. And Robert Fletcher is going to read you a list of sayings all said by the same person. As soon as you think you know who that person is, then press your buzzer to get in first. Ronald.
I get a little nauseated when I hear the phrase "freedom of the press" used as freely as it often is. A large part of our proprietorial press is not free at all. Memories don't last as long as you people in the media think. The authentic...
Graham Garden.
Richard Nixon.
No, it wasn't Richard Nixon. Yes, John Wells.
Harold Wilson.
Yes, it was Harold Wilson. So you
same
get...
thing.
Yes, of course.
I must
it was
listen very... to
you, Nigel. That's yes, of course. Yeah. Any other Wilsonisms that you would like to contribute?
A week in politics is a long time. That's the next line.
A week in politics is a long time. Any more?
Yes, the authentic voice is me, or whatever is the right grammar. I'm an optimist, but I'm an optimist who takes his raincoat with him. If you buy land on which is a slag heap 120 feet high and it costs £100,000 to remove it, that is not speculation, but reclamation.
Hey, John, whereas you get your 2 marks for that. Another of the same, all sayings by the same person.
All charming people have something to conceal. Usually their total dependence on the appreciation of others. Humorists are not happy men. Like Beachcomber or Saki or Thurber, they burn while Rome fiddles. Whom the gods wish to destroy, they first call promising. Were I to deduce any system from my feelings on leaving Eton, It might be called the theory of permanent adolescence.
John Wells.
Could it be the late Cyril Connolly?
Yes, it is indeed the late Cyril Connolly, and you can get two more marks, John. The one final remark, which would have pinched it, I think.
Yes, imprisoned in every fat man, a thin one is wildly signalling to be let out.
The last quote about every fat inside every fat man is a thin one was also sort of said by George Orwell in Coming Up for Air, as, has it ever struck you that there is a thin man inside every fat man, just as they say there is a statue inside every block of stone? And so on to something marginally less erudite, the catchphrase. Graham Garden, with whom do you associate this catchphrase here presented in a song?
Shut that door, it's freezing cold in here. Shut that door, I'm feeling rather queer. I haven't felt myself all day, 'cause I've been all alone. So come inside and shut that door and make yourself at home.
Yes, the well-known catchphrase, make yourself at home, belonging to Larry Grayson.
Yes, all right. Shut that door. Well done. Two marks, Graham. Ned Sherrin.
Where's my shirt? Where's my shirt? I can't have my shirt anywhere. Where's my shirt?
Where's me shirt?
I don't know.
You don't know. Offer it to the others.
Steptoe.
John Wells.
David Frost.
No, not David Frost. Offer it to the others. Graham Garden.
It's Ken Dodd.
Yes, Kenneth Dodd, the Squire of Notty Ash. What does he say to people in the audience?
He flashes his teeth round and tickles the ladies in the front row.
And says...
And says, good evening.
Actually, he says, good evening, missus.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Missus.
Have you been tickled? What a beautiful day.
That's right. Roberta Lee, what catchphrase does this music put you in mind of?
I don't know. A knee's up somewhere, but I wouldn't know.
Darling, good. Offer it to the others. Jay Wells.
And now for something completely different.
Yes, but why do you say that?
Parce que it is the Monty Python, you know, taking the Monty Python out of the... out of the modern
catchphrase. Anyone who's ever tried to introduce a magazine program on radio or television, it's a very useful phrase which enables you to get from an item on interviewing Hugh Scanlon to an item on baked beans or something. But I'm afraid Monty Python has rather taken away its usefulness. John Wells, here's the one aimed at you.
Thank you very much. Settle down now.
Settle down now.
Oh, you rat. What a... A North Country comedian.
Yes.
Probably with rather large trousers, as I see it in my mind.
No, fairly spelt trousers, actually.
Spelt trousers. Settle down now. I think it must be... a sort of Fred somebody.
Is it Les somebody?
No, it's not Fred or Les. Graham Garden.
It's Ken Goodwin.
Ken Goodwin, yes, absolutely.
He watches
right.
This lad. Oh, yeah. He's glued to the box, isn't he? Yes.
So you get your bonus mark, and in fact, you have left into the lead with John Wells.
He was behind on the literary one.
Now to some actual famous last words, or at least I hope they're fairly famous. Graham Garden, who said these words before he died?
I've had 18 straight whiskies. I think it's the record.
Wow. 18 straight whiskies. It's rather foolish to eat a record after 18 straight whiskies. No doubt that's what did him in, whoever it was.
Yeah. Wasn't that Russian West Kensington a few weeks back with the vodka, was it?
Well, who were well-known heavy drinkers who couldn't take more than 17 whiskies?
I should tell you that his biographer thinks that this was an exaggeration. He'd probably only had 4 or 5. Twice. Offer it to the others. Roberta Lee.
Dylan Thomas?
Absolutely right, yes. He died in New York, and his biographer, Constantine Fitzgibbon, says that he probably only had 4 or 5, but these were his last words.
I've
had
to us all.
I hope this will be a warning to everybody who's here tonight.
And those sitting at home, cradling a glass in their now
sipping
fingers.
Your BBC water, I'm sure. You'll agree with that. Ned Sherrin.
Qualis artifex pereo. What an artist the world is losing in me.
Every time I look through my book of quotations, this one hits me. And it isn't Nero, is it?
It is Nero. Graham Garden was dying to tell me that.
Yes, I was.
Roberta Lee, we actually have a recording of this man's final moments.
Oh. Et tu, Brute.
Now, who was that?
Do you want the actor? I mean, it's Julius Caesar.
Well, all right, who was the actor then?
Oh, I don't know. Actually, it sounded like someone in my garden digging for potatoes in clay soil. Who was the actor?
From a film or from a radio?
It was from a film.
The second film or the first?
The first film of Julius Caesar.
I can tell
you in that case. The second one was John Gielgud. The first one, John Gielgud played Cassius in the first one, and the Caesar was Louis Calonne.
That's right, that's right. But I'm only giving one mark to Roberta for that.
And one to me.
No marks for
that. What about the potatoes?
But I'll give you one extra mark if you can tell me the words which Shakespeare put after et tu, Brute.
Dies.
In well, fact, what Shakespeare put, et tu, Brute, then fall Caesar. And we have another action replay.
Then fall Caesar.
And there was the clump.
In fact, the stage direction.
Et tu, Brute, were, I mean, the words traditionally associated with Caesar as his last ones. Literally, a last word for you, John Wells.
Mozart.
Who said Mozart?
Mrs. Mozart at the moment of his delivery.
Keep on trying.
Well, I don't know who Mozart strangled, but I think it was probably not known that the true identity of the man in black in Vienna in the early 19th century was, in fact, Wolfgang Amadeus. And I think it was someone called Mrs. Pinkerton who he clutched by the throat. And as she was struggling with him, he was known as Wolfgang Amadeus the Ripper. And she pulled back his mask and said, "Mozart!" And then collapsed. And that's not a well-known story, but it probably gets me too much.
But I'll offer it to the others. Does anybody know who said Mozart before dying?
Graham Garden probably knows. Sounds like a vaudeville story.
I'll have to tell you. It was Gustav Mahler who said Mozart. Oh.
Well, he had a lot of trouble in his life, didn't he?
He did indeed, being filmed by Ken Russell being one of them. As I've remarked before, it's sometimes difficult to believe that some people's last words were ever actually spoken. And Cassandra, the Daily Mirror, once had this to say on the subject.
A certain amount of research on last dispatches from the edge of the tomb has been made, but I feel there's always been a tendency on the part of the imminent mourners to tart the script up a bit.
Well, in this round panel, we give you carte blanche to tart up the script as much as you like. What do you think ought to have been the last words of Sherlock Holmes?
Well, it's not, again, generally known that Sherlock Holmes died of terminal flatulence. And after the various explosions, sound effects and breaking windows subsided, he said, "Elementary, my dear."
I have the same last word, but the conversation was different in my reading of it. He was attended his bedside by Watson, and he said, "I want to leave my money to my old school in Croydon." Watson said, "Which school?" And he said, "Elementary, my dear Watson."
All right, moving on from Sherlock Holmes to a real-life lady, the waxworks lady, Madame Tussaud, or Madame Tussaud, as she's generally known, Roberta Lee.
Get stuff?
Thank you, Ned. Roberta.
That was if she did puppets. now, a little poem, I think.
Ah.
Though other folk may fade away, so peaceful and relaxed, right until my dying day, while others waned, I waxed.
Graham Garden.
I imagine this sort of rather touching deathbed scene as they wait for her to pass away. All around the bed, her husband Francois and her family are standing.
Was he called Francois?
He was called Francois.
Extra mark.
Thank you. And they stand there patiently in the twilight, and she looks up, opens her eyes, and says, "Ah, how nice of you, Francois and the family, to stand so patiently waiting to say a final farewell to me." I said, "How nice of you, Francois, and all the family to stand there so patiently waiting." Francois. I said, "How nice of you all to stand."
It was a very melting moment.
And another interesting character. What were the likely last words of the Marquis de Sade, please?
Oh, lovely.
He might also have said less tickle and more slap. Or most probably, since he was really plainly a masochist, he probably said, kiss me harder.
He might have said, now look, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you.
Well, I think actually, when he was told that he wasn't going to take his place with the angels, he said philosophically, ah, well, if you can't join them, beat them.
Well, now, and we have one final one, which is, what were Nell Gwynn's last words? Mm. Any ideas?
I can feel death's icy fingers creeping over my oranges.
I think she probably said, I hope Charles III's as good as you are, ducky.
Well, thank you very much, Tom, for some marvellous inventions. And with those last words, we come, in fact, to the end of this series of quote-unquote. And this week's winners are, in fact, Graham Garden and John Wells. And as this has been the last programme in the series, I'd just like to acknowledge the debt we owe to all the quotable people whose wit and wisdom we have filched, and to our many inventive panellists who now qualify to say with George Bernard Shaw,
I often quote myself. It adds spice to my conversation.
We hope you enjoyed it, and goodbye.
Taking part in quote-unquote with Graham Garden, Roberta Lee, Ned Sherrin and John Wells. The quotations were read by me, Ronald Fletcher. The series was devised, written and presented by Nigel Rees, with additional material by William Shakespeare, Samuel Johnson, Oscar Wilde and the producer, John Loy.